I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey wrestling fans, it is I, Sam, the Jew of the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of Sam Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 31, and on this episode, the end is near, as we get ready to close out the year with a look at Armageddon 2002. That's the last CMG of the year. I'm so happy to have lasted this long. As I continue to say, I'm probably going to say it every episode because, you know, this was started out as an experiment. I didn't know how long I would go, but this has now become one of the premier podcasts that I love to do. It's, you know, it's kind of funny. This has kind of taken over, in a way, Tokyo SOS. Not that I won't do more episodes of Tokyo SOS or anything, but a lot of that show was to be based off the Godzilla movies, and with limited access, at least at this point in time, due to money and lots of things, to the other movies, though I think I have more of the Gargantuans, and maybe at some point I'm going to sit down and do it. That's actually something that's also hampered me, is also limited time with going to college and having work. And just being tired and everything, and just wanting to relax a lot of times more often than not. You know, I've had a lot of podcasts, which I still plan on doing, some of them, yeah, like I said, those Tokyo SOS episodes, my Hexcast podcast, which I really hate because I really love talking about Tarot, which is Black Rose comic book, it's my favorite comic book. The multiple different attempts at doing comic book, the more recent one being the Intergalactic Graphic Review, which two episodes in, you know, so far so good. Because I do love talking about comics, so that's more of my Rage Out podcast. The point I'm getting at is that even with, and you've seen it here with CMG, Missing Weeks, and Tom Prerogative, it's gotten hard to do podcasts. I have a full schedule. And it's a lot of times for a person like me, if you don't know, I'm somebody with autism. It's hard for me to focus. So the fact to be able to, as much as I've been able to, on a weekly schedule and be as consistent as I possibly can to get an episode out. Because it doesn't take a lot, because first you have to watch. I'm somebody who actually likes to watch the content in question and then review it. I don't like, you know, going just based off memory. It's kind of sucks because I have a friend who wants to review something with me, and I'm desperately trying to get hold of the source material to review it. But that's here nor there. So, in other words, end of the year, I've gotten 31 episodes out. I've it's been a good first year for CMG, which is not over, because I still have two more months, in a way, until we reach our one-year anniversary, which will be the first weekend of the month. I'll have to look back and see when I posted the first episode, mind you. But anyways, I know it was like the first week of March or something around that time, because it was around, or first or second, it was around the time WWE Network launched, I had planned to do it. Of course, what the first episode was, which was ECW One Night Stand 2005. So in other words, I'm very happy to still be doing this. That being said, before we get into the review proper, I do have to sort of rectify a mistake I made on the last podcast. I came to the realization as I was posting it, and like, you know what, it's already posted, I'll fix it at the beginning of this episode. I forgot to give a rating to Armageddon 2000. I told you what my top three moments were and top three matches were. I don't think I gave a rating, or at least I don't believe I gave a rating for it, but I'm pretty sure I did give a rating for it, and so I'm here to rectify that. For all those wondering, I give Armageddon 2000 a 4 out of 5. It's a solid pay-per-view with some solid matches. Definitely more enjoyable than I thought I would, because I always heard that pay-per-view was a clusterfuck from a lot of people. But, you know, you had the Chris Jericho match, which was very entertaining. The Hell in a Cell, despite just being a clusterfuck, still being entertaining. The entertaining tag team match, and which we'll see some continuity here with the tag team match that starts off this one. I find it funny, we start off both pay-per-views, I believe, with a tag team match. In fact, we started off with fatal four-way tag team matches for tag team titles. There's a lot of comparisons, and I'll make through when we go into review proper, but 4 out of 5 for Armageddon 2000. So I guess that sets a high mark for Armageddon 2002, which we're reviewing today, to overcome and succeed. So why don't you say we get right into it, as we have Armageddon 2002 presented by Lugs and the World Wrestling Entertainment, featuring the brands of Raw and SmackDown. It takes place on December 15th, 2002, with an attendance of 9,000 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in the suburb of Sunrise. Your co-commentator teams include, for Raw, Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross, and for SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz. Ladies and gentlemen, the end is near. Let's get into Armageddon 2002.
You came to me in a dream last night. You were standing in a brilliant light. 1 minute here, but the next you were gone. I thought you could stay, but I was so wrong. The end is here. The game is over. No more pretending.
Welcome back, and let's get the review started proper. First, let's start off with the Sunday Night Heat match, to at least talk about it, because, again, remember when I talked about those similarities between this and Armageddon 2000? Now, the funny thing about it, this is actually the very next Armageddon, because 2001 didn't have an Armageddon. Vengeance was actually the pay-per-view that took place in December for 2001. So this is actually the very next Armageddon pay-per-view even though it's 2 years after. But anyways, so Sunday Night Heat, we once again have D'Lo Brown in a match, as Jeff Hardy takes on D'Lo Brown and defeats D'Lo Brown in a singles match. So again, the similarity here of D'Lo Brown not only being in a match, but being defeated in a match, as in 2000 on Sunday Night Heat, Scotty Too Hotty, defeated D'Lo Brown in a singles match. But our first match proper, I was right and I was not right. I was right in the fact that, once again, the pay-per-view is being opened with a tag team match. I just thought, for some reason, off the top of my mind, and then I looked back up and realized I was wrong. But I thought that the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team Championship match had started the pay-per-view. I was wrong. It was the Intergender Tag Team 6-Man Tag Match between the Radicals and Team Extreme that opened the pay-per-view in 2000. But same point in time, it is a tag team match nonetheless. But we opened the pay-per-view with a tag team elimination match for the World Tag Team titles. Now, of course, this was during the brand extension where, like, over the summer, Brock Lesnar declared he'd only defend the WWE title on SmackDown. So Bischoff brought the World Heavyweight title to be the exclusive championship, heavyweight championship title for Raw. And then they split, and there were two different tag team titles. There was the WWE titles on SmackDown, the World Tag Team Championship on Raw. You know, things like, I want to say, like, the Intercontinental title would be on Raw, and you would have the United States title on SmackDown, and, you know, so on. And, of course, Cruiserweight title would exclusively be on SmackDown as well. And so you have these titles that would be exclusive to those brands, and so you have one tag team championship be defended 1 month pay-per-view, and then the other one being defended next one, as is the case here, because WWE, I'm saying this because we reviewed Survivor Series 2002, which was the pay-per-view before this, so, and we're, for the next, these 3 months, we're actually going to be seeing three pay-per-views in order, Survivor Series 2002, Armageddon 2002, and I plan on reviewing Royal Rumble 2003. So we'll see those in order, or at least those three, because I do think they make up a good series of pay-per-views. I had seen Royal Rumble 2003 before, but we'll get to that when we get to that review next month, or I should say in a couple weeks. Anyways, back on topic, this is the World Tag Team titles, which were the championships this time, were Chris Jericho and Christian, so you have Booker T and Goldust versus the team of Lance Storm and William Regal versus the Dudley Boys versus the champions Chris Jericho and Christian in a tag team elimination match where, like the tag team match in Survivor Series, if one of your partners got pinned, the team was eliminated and had to go to the back. This was a really, really good opening match. Great chemistry. Of course, you had the Dudleys that were solid tag team. You had Lance Storm, William Regal, that I think their personalities really fit well together, and they had just formed as a tag team, and, you know, they were really building the tag team up as, you know, again, a very technical tag team. You know, you had the Bruiser and Regal, and then the very technical, you know, Hart Family Dungeon graduate in Lance Storm. You had Chris Jericho and Christian, who were, you know, again, Christian a tag team specialist, and Chris Jericho, who just, they made a great heel tag team together as, you know, the, I can't remember if before or after this, I believe it was before they were the part of the Un-Americans, or as such. And of course, then you had the, they had formed, I believe, a couple months ago, or about a month ago, the tag team of Booker T and Goldust, which was, again, they were the big face team. Like, so you had the Dudley Boys that were, they really face, you had the big faces put together with Goldust and Booker T, and you had two heel tag teams, Lance Storm, William Regal, and Chris Jericho, Christian. And I thought they put on a solid match. Now, again, that similarity, there's a point where Bubba Ray and Goldust, they start doing the jab. The jabbing, jabbing, jabbing. Now, unlike, it's a Armageddon 2000, where it was Road Dogg and Bubba, and they do the shake, rattle, and roll, and then see each other and hit the clothesline. This case, it was a beloved little love letter to the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, brother. As you know, they hit, and then do a little circle with their arms, and they grab their crosses and go, double butt, and they hit the bionic elbow on both of them. And then they, like, butts. Because it's gold dust. It was very entertaining. Like, that's awesome. I'm pleased in very simple ways. Yes. I like how, the eliminations went. I like that, Landstorm went regularly eliminated first by, Dudley Death Drop. Then followed by the Dudleys getting defeated by Jericho. And then Booker T and Goldust put on a really good... the first half of the match had the four teams, and then two were eliminated real quickly, and the last half was basically Booker T and Goldust versus Jericho and Christian. And they did a very solid tag team, great storytelling throughout the match. There was a storyline of Goldust thinking he was the weak link, and of course he would get the hot tag to Booker T. Booker T would come in, raise hell, and it would all build towards... Booker T getting the bookend on Jericho as he was trying to, use the belt to get a cheap win. 1, 2, 3, and great celebration for the great new face tag team. I liked Booker T and Goldust as a tag team. I firmly remember liking them as a tag team. So they're always fun. Solid opening tag team match. And of course we have a change in titles. And one thing, I gotta give it up to the commentary team that they continued, this would actually be Michael Cole and Taz, as they brought up that Survivor Series, every title changed hand, and at this pay-per-view, another title changed hand. So this was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and this was 6. So 6 on a pay-per-view, they've had 6 titles change hand in a row. So that, I think, really added to, booking wise. They've been changing all these titles, Will the women's title change? Because that was... Will the WWE title change hands? You thought maybe one of them will, but you didn't think that, all three would change hands. One, maybe two would. But I think booking-wise, it was great for, because again, let's be honest, they're always trying to fool the smart marks. WWE has always been like that. And smart marks will, again, trying to think like a smart mark, they're not going to change all these titles again. So, in a way, booking-wise, I thought that was very clever for them to have the World Tag Team titles change. Of course, it also complemented the storyline, so everything there worked really well. Our next match was Edge versus the newly named A-Train, the man formerly known as Albert at the time, now known as A-Train, of course, then at some point would leave and then come back years later as Tensai, who now does commentating for NXT. The most surprising thing I ever found out about A-Train is that he's Jewish. Like me. The hair should have been a dead giveaway. It really should. I don't know why that never registered on my Judar. Like, wow, all that hair, he must be Jewish. Jews just don't wrestle. We hire hitmen. Jews don't... Well, not that Jews don't go camping, it's just that we have it catered, but that's here or there. Anyways, this is a solid match. They had a story about Edge trying to get retribution for his friend and tag team partner, Rey Mysterio, who, of course, A-Train jumped in and cost them the tag team titles. He viciously attacked Rey and caused an injury to his knee, which is kayfabe. And so Edge was trying to get retribution for what A-Train did to his partner. And it had a very solid match. 7 minutes and 12 seconds, but it did seem a little bit longer than that. not in the bad way, that it felt like it was just lagging on. In the good way, to where it felt like there was a lot of stuff happening. It felt like a 10-minute match, more than being under than that. Of course, the end comes by disqualification with a chair to build up future storyline being told on SmackDown. But still a very solid match and a bit filler for the pay-per-view to have another match there for the pay-per-view. But still, worked very fine. They told great story. They continued the storyline as part of a feud. And I was very entertained by the match. Now here's a match. The next match we have is a match that that would set up a wrestler for his title match for Royal Rumble and set up what quite and the reason why I'm reviewing 2003 Royal Rumble, but set up one of my favorite matches of all time. Next match is Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero. Now, they had a great storyline going into this. Of course, Eddie Guerrero won the Tag Team Title Survivor Series. And Eddie Guerrero would ultimately cost Chris Benoit a chance at number one contendership, which would be won by Angle. And so they had, a grudge going, and it was to be settled here. Oh my God, it's Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero at their absolute finest. This was a goddamn clinic. It is actually the second longest match of the night by 4 seconds at 16 minutes and 47 seconds, which is 4 seconds longer than the first match of the evening, which the tag team match, which is 16 minutes and 43 seconds. Only the main event would be longer at 38 minutes and 35 seconds. But oh my God, these two put on an absolute clinic about how a wrestling match is supposed to be done. Vince, I understand that. You don't want to think about Chris Benoit anymore, but really, put this in. Watch this match, because this is how you guys used to put on matches. This match is an absolute clinic about how a wrestling match is supposed to go. Eddie was a great heel in this match. Benoit was a great, this rising face. They sold the hell out of their injuries. And a great back and forth, a great technical wrestling skill. It was just like, I was good, oh my God, I got so into this match. I'm like, even though I know who's going to win, it's like, I'm so into this match. And it was a beauty to watch. You had Eddie Guerrero being classic Eddie Guerrero, lying, cheating, stealing, trying to find any way he can, while at the same time still looking strong. And that's the thing is, when he'd cheat because he wanted to, not because he had to. And throughout the match, because he controlled Chris Benoit through a lot of the match and was, oh my God, it was a great match. Of course, Chris Benoit would come back. Trevor would get involved, but you had the flying headbutt that was literally all the way across the ring. That was amazing. And I love the ending. I love the ending. The ending came where, building up and, a counter of the lasso of El Paso. And eventually, Benoit trying to go for the sharpshooter and, Eddie tries to get away and tries to scramble the rope, but Chris Benoit cuts him off and starts trying to go for the crossface, and he can't get the arm trap, and he is trying to trap his left arm. His right arm is trying to reach for the rope. Chris Benoit sees that and then switches to the other side and put the crossface on the other side to prevent him from getting to the rope, since it was in a slant and the right arm is closer to the rope than the other. Eddie tries to counter by rolling through, but Chris Benoit holds on, and they end up in the middle of the ring, which forces Eddie Guerrero to be trapped, and he has to tap out. I'm like, oh my God, that was a beautiful sequence to end the match. That's a sequence. That's how you end a match. There's so much storytelling, as you can see, I just told you, and so much psychology. You can see exactly why the wrestlers were doing what they were doing. He was trying to go sharpshooter. Eddie tried to get to the ropes. Seeing it go to the ropes, switched from the sharpshooter to the crossface. Couldn't lock it on. And Eddie was trying to use his right arm, which is closer. And seeing that, Eddie, you know, Chris switches to the other side. Eddie tries to counter, but counters back and gets himself trapped. But Chris counters back, gets himself trapped, as I just told you this again. Do you see the psychology I'm repeating over and over and over again here? And that's the point. So much psychology was in this match. People selling why their body parts were injured. Selling why they were doing maneuvers. No wasted moments. Taz and Cole did a great job commentating on this match. I thought they did a great job the entire pay-per-view commentating on this match. But oh my god. It's just... it was a wonderful, wonderful match. And like... and I had never seen this match. I'm like, wow, that... I'd never seen this match, and I had missed this match for a long time. Like, this has become, I think, one of my favorite matches of all time. Definitely in my top 25, at the very least, if not top 20. I'm like, wow, that was a great match. And you know what? I would say this. This pay-per-view is worth watching just for that match. Now, before our next match... by the way, definitely, as if you can't tell, this match gets 5 stars! Before our next match, though, we have a little storyline that is told. Now, on this time during SmackDown, if you don't know, one of my favorite divas of all time, Tori Wilson, was involved in the storyline with Dawn Marie, where Dawn Marie was, basically engaged to her father, Al. And as the storyline goes before Armageddon, you know, Dawn makes a deal, you know, that's really about, you know, telling Tori, it's really about you, and if you come to my hotel room tonight, I'll break off my engagement with your father. And of course, they failed this. They filmed to a certain point, but Dawn Marie says, no, when Al finds this out, Dawn's honest, but this, for whatever reason, because it's absolutely creepy, because, you know, they were basically, he was a hound dog and, like, head over heels for her and couldn't think straight. But that's besides the point. It's a very creepy storyline in a lot of ways. I think it really stretched how far men were willing to go. Like, we want to see these girls in a sexy storyline, but this is really pushing it. Anyways... yeah, Dawn Marie promised to show the footage of what was not shown on pay-per-view. Woo! I never felt so creepy and horrible and yet so hot at the same time. Bra and panties. I love it when I get bra and panties. I love when I get beautiful women allowing to be beautiful women. Because, you know, say what you want about... whether it's misogynistic or whatever, at least these women were allowed to play a goddamn motherfucking character. As opposed to today, where they're basically either one of two versions of the same character. They're either the good version of a prissy uptight bitch, or a bad version of a prissy uptight bitch that is on Total Divas. With the exception of a couple wrestlers here and there, i.e. namely AJ Lee, Naomi, Paige, and NXT Charlotte. Because women wrestling? Now, mind you, we get pretty hard on Vince McMahon for that, but let's be honest to why corporate wants this. And Vince wants this, because it's what the world wants. Because let's be honest, women to the elitist world that they're apparently trying to, whose viewership they want, women wrestling, don't make us laugh. You know, if you can't tell me, I'm being really sarcastic about all of that because it really pisses me off. And I'd like to point out that, yes, while this is all about showing women in basically in their bra and panties, having lesbian relationships. I was about to say hinting. I'm like, they do more than hint. They pretty much damn near confirm it. They just don't show the X-rated material. They show it up to a point of them kissing, basically. And then they let you fill in the rest in your own fanfiction that goes on in your mind. And I have seen the fanfiction, by the way. But that's besides the point. Right now, somewhere, TWK is now curled up in a ball crying. Because of that and the fact that in a couple weeks he's going to have to review Royal Rumble 2000 with me. And we are going to talk about the swimsuit contest. I'm making goddamn sure we're going to spend at least 5 minutes on that, folks. Again, I know I'm getting off topic, but just follow me here, folks. My point being is there's more story and more character. And that's what the important thing is whether they're wrestling or whether they're in a bathing suit contest, it's all about presenting a character. And the fact of the matter is these storylines have 100 times more character than any match going on right now. You know, even AJ Lee. Now, I like AJ Lee. She is a great wrestler, and she has a great character. But really, up until her feud with Nikki Bella, say what you want, by the way. But, you know, yes, Paige and AJ had a great match. But the characters were, I don't know. It had dueling characters, and storyline-wise, as much as we may enjoy it, the characters were there. Matches that have fully embraced and fully put out their characters, where they seem larger than life, are much better than just a straight wrestling match. And I know we want to see straight wrestling. I hope that you understand the point I'm trying to bring with all this, is that despite the misogyny that's more than likely with this storyline that was going on before our next match, there's a lot of character in here, and I think WWE could learn a lot to take a lot from what they were doing at this time for both the women wrestlers and the divas. Again, we'll get into this because we do have a women's championship match. And again, you see the same thing there. But we'll get to that because that's actually after our next match. Our next match proper is the pay-per-view debut of Batista, or as he's been commonly known now, Blue-tista, but there's nothing blue about him here. He's in full red. So Batista with Ric Flair versus Kane. Now, this by far is the worst match of the night. It's two heavyweights going at each other. Now, Kane is in his prime here, and he's great. You could still see that Batista was, I don't want to say he was green, but at the same point in time, he wasn't, he was still, you could still, he was still learning some things. I had the most obvious botch of the night, and when Batista goes for a powerbomb, now, I'll give him credit. They really blurred the line of whether it was a botch or whether it was Kane countering and getting out, but it slowed down to a point to where it really seemed like it was more of a botch. But they, you know, I give them credit. Instead of going for it again, they continued on with the match, and they basically used that to set up the ultimate finish, which was the Batista bomb, which would happen later. Still a solid match and, you know, a great debut for Batista, but by far the worst match of the evening. By far. Our next match, again, we have the women again. We have the WWE Women's Championship being defended in a triple threat match of where the WWE Women's Champion Victoria defends against Trish Stratus and Jacqueline. Of course, Jacqueline looking mighty fine. I'm a big mark for Jacqueline, if you can't tell. I love this match. You know what? This match is really only like 4.5 minutes, yet this match seemed like it was 10 minutes long. And again, in that good way, because it's so fast and furious, and it seems like they're doing so much in the match. It was just so entertaining to watch, and it was, and they were wrestling. WRESTLIN. Wrestling. And you know why it seemed so great? Because these women had characters which were part of their performance, and their characters shined out. You know, Jacqueline was the gorgeous veteran of like over 10 years, who was looking for her championship. You know, you had Trish Stratus, the up-and-comer fan favorite, former champion, who had a unique style, who everybody loved. And then, of course, you had the newbie, Victoria, who was just a psychopath. And again, character comes out so well here. And by the way, when I say psychopath, I don't mean crazy Alicia Fox, oh, I'm going to go crazy and throw a temper tantrum and grab a fan soda and throw it all over the place and then jump and grab popcorn and grab JBL's hat and pour popcorn in and put it on JBL's hat. I mean, she's fucking biting off people's fingernails. She's beating the living shit out of people, causing them to bleed. Psycho! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, that type of character. And it shined through. And it's this serial psychopath just, oh. And I say that because of the ending to where, you know, she has a title and she hits Trish in the head and then covers Jacqueline, who she had initially hit with the chick kick. But, solid triple threat from these three women. And again, a big part of that is because their characters shine through in the match. Again, throughout this pay-per-view, just great storytelling overall. I think this is why I really like this era of, you know, really halfway through 2002, all the way up to about, I want to say 2007, 2008, because storytelling was just absolutely terrific at that time. I think through on both Raw and SmackDown. Our next match, we come to our double main event, and our next match is Kurt Angle versus The Big Show, the current WWE Champion, with Paul Heyman in his cover, in his corner. Now, the great thing about this is the whole thing is, you know, after his title loss at Survivor Series, Brock gets, mind you, this may be the one thing is, now, mind you, the pay-per-view itself does a great job but with vignettes of retelling what happened. So if you didn't watch Survivor Series 2000 and hadn't watched the Raw and SmackDowns, you are filled in on the story of exactly what's happening. So basically, Brock gets suspended because he attacks everybody. Kurt gets suspension lifted and is asking Brock to show up in his corner. And Brock says, basically, I'll think about it. All in all, this was a solid match. You know, Kurt Angle and Big Show did a great job of sort of that David versus Goliath storyline. Kurt showing his amateur skills coming into play, trying to chop the Big Show down. But of course, Big Show with one move getting the momentum with just one move, basically. I had another word and then I lost the word, but that's besides the point. And so they dealt this great story, and of course, one of the moments of the match is early on, Big Show counters Angle and like throws him out of the ring, but he lands on Paul Heyman, and Taz has the quote of the night and saying, like, can we see that on a replay, and can I get that on videotape, you know, for memories? But they tell great stories. Then they have a run-in by A-Train, and then, of course, eventually Brock Lesnar runs in, gives Big Show the F5, and Kurt Angle crawls over and pins Big Show for the WWE Championship. Like I said, solid match, told a great story, and was building towards... This was really a storyline that started in Survivor Series, continued here, and would continue all the way through till WrestleMania. I really remember this storyline, like all the twists and turns in this storyline for Brock to lose his title and then for him to earn it back at Mania versus Kurt Angle. And mind you, this is part of a really great rivalry that would be started because of this storyline between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar that would continue all the way through for the next year. And so, again, you see the storyline being told here done really, really well. Our that brings us to our final match. Our final match is Triple H versus WWE World Heavyweight Champion Shawn Michaels in a 2 out of 3 falls match, or should I say more probably a 3 stages of hell match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The first fall is a street fight. The second fall is a cage match, and if needed, which it is here, obviously, the third fall is a ladder match. Pretty much when you say 3 stages of hell, more often than not, it's going to go 3 stages of hell. It's just a matter of, okay, who's going to win the first fall, who's going to win the second fall. So, the match, like I said, the match starts out with a street fight. This, by the way, this was a really good match, really entertaining. I mean, the Shawn Michaels-Triple H rivalry was just entertaining from start to finish when it started at SummerSlam months earlier. With Shawn Michaels making his wrestling return after 4 years. And just front to back, you know. Again, mind you, also, I had recently seen that rivalry episode where they detailed Triple H's and Shawn Michaels rivalry. And I just love the fact, like we were friends and we trusted each other, so we just beat the shit out of each other. And you could tell, like, you could feel it here, and you could just feel it being real here in this rivalry. The street fight was... I have yet to really see fully the SummerSlam match, but from everything I've seen, this really matched its velocity, and they did new things. That's the thing. They didn't just do all the same things. I love the psychology of everybody thinks that he's going to go after Shawn's back. And mind you, he does, but Triple H in the street fight spends a lot of it going after the legs to cut his legs down. That was his main way of fighting, was with his legs. Just some wicked trash can shot. You know, there's a great psychology to where they're fighting and, you know, Triple H picks up a trash can and he had been working on his back, and then just hits him square in the head with the trash can. And King makes a great comment here, great color comment, like, you know, that's a screwball assassin for you. What did everybody think he was going to go for? The legs or the back, huh? So Triple H does the opposite thing, goes for the head. I love the psychology being told there, and I love the commentary team also portraying and, you know, commentating on that psychology. Again, two great wrestlers. A large part of it, this what made this match, especially this street fight, work so well was the psychology being told in it. Greatly done. They go down the entranceway. They get to the entrance ramp. Triple H knocks Shawn Michaels down, goes in back, comes back out. Here's Barbie! As apparently he went to Mick Foley's house and brought back the 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire. And he goes to hit Michaels and then stops. And then he goes back to the entranceway. Now, mind you, the entranceway of Survivor Series... By the way, I love the stage setup with the... you have these two... It's all metal. And you have SmackDown and Raw on either side. And they come out the thing and there's this back wall that always has flames going. And Triple H sees the flames. And he just... And mind you, if you actually look closely when he brought it out, you could see that the top was a lot darker than the bottom. Which told me immediately it had lighter fluid on it. So I saw it coming. I'm like, you know you want to do it. You know you want to do it, motherfucker. And sure enough, goes back, sees it, like, puts Barbie down in the fire, raises it up. We've got a framing 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire. ECW! 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 Goes for the kill, Shawn Michael counters, and then hits basically Triple H in the face with it. Like, the hardcore man in me is very, very happy. Ultimately, though, Triple H cuts his legs on the nip and hits the pedigree and gets the first fall. Then you have the cage. Now, mind you, the one criticism I have of this match is that the street fight took up a majority of the match. I think I would have liked to see more of a balance. The ladder match is only about, I think, like... 7-10 minutes long. The cage match is only about 10 minutes long. See, the straight fight was about 20 minutes long. And I just think it would have done it maybe at least better for like the street fight to have been 15 minutes, the cage match be 15 minutes, and then you can have the ladder match be about 10 minutes. But, yeah, it just... I would have liked a little bit more balance between the matches. But nonetheless, you didn't have the cage match. And the other thing about this is that this pay-per-view is about 2 hours and 48 minutes long, so they had another 10 minutes they could have worked with. But either way, the cage match, just more brutal. I love the psychology continuously told through them. There is a weird part where they're on the top of the cage, and like, you know, somebody can just drop down. And that's another criticism, is that that lost some momentum in the match, because it's basically, obviously, they were there and so that Flair could set up these tables. And it became obvious that it was being set up for something that was going to happen later on, either in this match or in possibly the third fall. Or for those who knew that, it went to three falls for the third fall. But I do like the way the second fall happened by Shawn Michaels climbing to the top of the cage and just doing a falling splash onto Triple H through the table. Got the crowd wired up. You can feel the energy in the crowd. By the way, great crowd in Fort Lauderdale. And then, of course, you had the final fall of the ladder match. You know what? The ladder match fall was very pedestrian. Yeah, and I understand the psychology between it being that, you know, they were both, you know, exhausted and in pain, but at the same point in time, it seemed way too quick for a ladder match, you know, because a ladder match is a hard match. You just don't, especially after having a street fight and a cage match, you just don't climb up as fast as they did. At the same point in time, I do like the finish of Shawn Michaels' ladder being pushed over by Triple H, him falling through the four tables, Triple H getting up and winning, and, you know, it led to Jim Ross having a great line, like, yeah, love him or hate him, Triple H proved that he is that damn good. So, really enjoyed this match. It was a really good match, and, you know, definitely, you know, despite my criticisms of it, it was a great match. And while it had its flaws, like I said, it was definitely worth the price of the pay-per-view. So, at the end of the day, I thought this was a really good pay-per-view. Just so many solid matches, and just the main thing I love is that while they were good wrestling matches, they also had great psychology in the matches, and they told great storylines. As far as my three favorite moments, number three is the double Bionic Elbow by Goldust and Bubba Ray Dudley. I love that. That was just awesome. Number two. By the way, honorable mention to Tori Wilson and Dawn Marie in bra and panties in a hotel room, video footage, making out. I'm sort of clamped right now. And once again, right now, TWK just threw his headphones off and is now crying in a corner. Yes. Feel my evil. But my second favorite move of the night was Chris Benoit's flying headbutt all the way across the ring. Because that was a long way to do that. But my number three favorite move or at least my number one, excuse me, number one favorite move, without a doubt, is Flaming Barbie. It's back. Anytime somebody brings out a flaming 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire, I'm a happy person. I'm very, very happy. So, Shawn Michaels hitting Triple H in the head with Flaming Barbie. Not the most out-of-your-world, mind-blowing move, but yeah. As far as my three matches are concerned, the opening match is my third favorite match. Great way they opened the show. My number two match is the main event, ultimately, the three stages of hell between Michaels and Triple H. Told a great story, was a great rivalry, they put on a hell of a show. But my number one favorite, and you know, the thing about it is, as I was preparing for the review, I'm like, do I put this match over the three stages of hell? But then again, at the same point in time, while, you know, Triple H and Shawn Michaels had some of those continuity flaws and some of the... Ultimately, it came down to the fact that in that cage match, a bit of their momentum slowed down, and the fact that I felt it was unbalanced in the time each match had, because the Street Fight was longer than the cage and the ladder match. And because of that, ultimately, my favorite match is a match that I really can't find anything wrong with, because it was absolutely perfect. And it had a great story, it told great psychology. Both wrestlers look strong, but Chris Benoit ultimately came out looking stronger, which would lead towards his title shot at Royal Rumble 2003. So Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero, my favorite match, was Armageddon 2002. It is an absolutely fantastic 5-star match that is, you know, there are multiple matches. Three Stages of Hell, the Chris Benoit-Eddie Guerrero, Kurt Angle versus Big Show, and the tag team match, all four are worth watching this pay-per-view for. The tag team and Kurt Angle match might not be worth buying the pay-per-view for, but Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero and Triple H versus Shawn Michaels and Three Stages of Hell by themselves were worth buying the pay-per-view for. The Kurt Angle Big Show match and Booker T Goldust tag team elimination match with Lance Storm, William Regal, the Dudleys, and Jericho and Christian complemented those matches, and you had some good filler matches that were solid. Everything told great stories, and of course you had Tori Wilson and her skimpies. Yes, I will continue to say that. All in all, you have an absolutely fantastic pay-per-view that told great storylines, continued rivalries, had great psychology to it, and was just so damn entertaining to watch. So, at the end of the day, I think I may have accidentally, by the way, called this Survivor Series, so I apologize for that. But at the end of the day, I give Armageddon 2002 a 4.5 out of 5. Just a great pay-per-view, so entertaining to watch, and I highly suggest you watch this. As I think one of the best times in WWE's history, as they were really... See, that's why I sometimes argue that, you know, there was an immediate downfall in quality of WWE. I think wrestling-wise, there was actually a raise in quality in WWE, because you had all these WCW and ACW guys who were trying to take a spot from the WWE guys being there, and everybody's game rose. It was just when all of that had finally fizzled out and everybody had their place that it started to slow down. In some places. Though not as much as when WWE decided to become more family-friendly and everything got screwed up. But that's discussion for another day. So 4.5 out of 5 for me. And that is it for this episode of CMQ's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments, remember, I can't, you know, do anything unless you guys send in comments. Remember, there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can send me email by emailing to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also send us a comment through our Stitcher account, which I need to get updated in that, and I apologize. You can find that at www.stitcher.com and search for the Absolution Network. You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. Leave us a comment there. Of course, always leave us a comment with the title of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And also, you can always leave a comment on the post itself, which you can find at the website, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast, along with Shin Tiger Curl's wrestling and anime videos, and John Ramos's Toku videos, which includes Toku Apocalypse. Great stuff. Also check out the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, where you find Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS Podcasting Network, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, which features my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast. And, of course, while you're at any of these sites, check out the sidebars and check out all our friends. This, of course, includes Matty J, TWK, and the WrestleCast on RVT Entertainment, Michael Bailey and the Views from the Long Box podcast, Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles, Steven Syker and the Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner and the Two Two Freaks podcasting network, along with many others. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, it's January, which means it's time to rumble. And we start off the month by looking at the year that Austin and McMahon battled in the Rumble. I am, of course, talking about Royal Rumble 1999. Oh, it's going to be a good month, folks. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's raised by a blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's raised by a blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and I don't even know. Remember to live that fast life, but you're grateful.